From the Witherspoon Concert Hall in Omaha's Joslyn Memorial, KIOS-FM proudly presents another program from the Uta Hawley Lecture Series. We'll hear a talk given by David Goldman, the Laughing Stockbroker. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Monday morning, November 12, 2001, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Uta Hawley Girls Village, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speaker is Dennis McCarville, Chief Executive Officer of Uta Hawley Girls Village.
David has been described as one of the most unique, original speaker entertainers in America. He is the creator and producer and the voice of the Laughing Stockbroker show at abcnews.com. His background as a headline stand-up comedian places him head and shoulders above his peers in entertaining his audiences as he educates them. In fact, his Humor in the Workplace seminar has been heralded as some of the best in the business. If you can make business leaders want to come to a seminar about the future of the world's economy and then make them laugh, you must not only be a good at handling financial issues, but you also must be a darn good comedian. Without further ado, let me introduce to you Mr. David Goldman.
Thank you. How is everybody? Good. How are the rest of you? This is a wonderful town. The last time I was here actually was on 9/12 of this year. I spoke to 800 people in Des Moines, Iowa on 9/11 and got a rental car here and drove home to Seattle afterwards. But I've always enjoyed, other than that time, of course, coming back here. We have a family friend who's very close with my brother, stood up in his wedding, named Pat Hazel, who's a comedian from here. You might know the Hazel family. And he's a proud father of a new baby. I don't know if you knew that. It's pretty exciting. But everything is, one of the reasons I wanted to come here is this is the home of one of my heroes in investing. the person who started Level 3. of course, talking about Warren Buffett. He's absolutely a hero, and he's stronger now than ever in terms of his philosophy. And it's something that we need to think about in the times that we're in. 9/11. What happened? We know what happened, but the day after, the market went down 7.1%. That's a lot of money. I'm sure you looked at your portfolios and said, that's really a lot of money. But as you know, if you've been following the market since that time, and even today after today's event, that we're really not sure what's going on right now, but market's down about 100.5 points. That's not really a big hit, but the markets have rebounded since 9/11. And what have the experts said to do after 9/11? Well, it doesn't matter because most people are running to the bank or the credit union, putting their money in there. As a matter of fact, last year, for the first 6 months of the year, more money went into equity mutual funds or stock mutual funds than into the banks. About $250 million went into mutual funds. About $60 million went to the banks. This year, about $250 million went into the banks and $30 million went into equity mutual funds. So the markets went down, a great time to buy, and everybody put their money in the banks. Warren Buffett said, I won't be selling anything, and there are some things that I might buy in here. Robert Rubin, Treasury Secretary, said, keep your eyes on the long-term strength of our economy and react calmly. And Jack Welch, former chairman and CEO of GE, said, I'll probably just hold. This is the best place in the world to invest, and we have the strongest economy. We forget that because we get so excited about what's happening on the news, and we run to the bank for those high interest. What's the one-year CD paying right now? About 2%? Okay. But the markets rebound. Marianne and I were talking about this earlier, and I told her not to talk about it in my introduction because she'd steal my thunder, but the markets rebound. They always come back over time. If you look at some recent crises over time, Pearl Harbor, the market went down 6.5%. After JFK's assassination, the market went down 2.9%, and after the Gulf War, the market went down 4.7%. These were all tragedies, and we were frightened and concerned about our investments, so we put our money in the bank, took the money off the table, and the markets went down. 1 year after each crisis, this is how those markets performed. After Pearl Harbor, the market went up 6.4%. After JFK's assassination, it went up 25%. And after the Gulf War, it went up 29.5%. So the lesson from this is simply that you keep your money in the market. It's really hard to hear when you see all these things going on the news. And if you look at 5 years after the crisis, the cumulative performance is pretty outstanding. 50%, 32%, and 93.2%. So I know that a lot of people took their money out after 9/11. And the place to be, again, is if you're in the market, stay in the markets. Because it's time in the market and not timing the market. So many people think that I'm going to get out, and when the market gets good, I'm going to put my money back in. You've probably heard that at cocktail parties. You've probably heard that at work from your barber. All the experts know. Every time I walk my dog to the park, people are giving me financial advice. You know, I just heard from my friend there, he's a professional painter, that we should get out of the market. Oh, that's great. Over a 9-year period, the market has returned 17.5%. The market, I'm talking about the Standard & Poor's 500. I'm talking about quality companies. I'm not talking about upstarts. I'm not talking about high-tech companies that don't have products or earnings yet. I'm talking about the S&P 500. How many of you, over a 9-year period, probably enjoy a 17.5% return. A few of you? Beats that 2% at the bank right now. But that's if you stayed in all the time. If you missed the 10 best days over that period of time, your return would have only been 12.6%. If you would have missed 30 of the best days, your return would have been 6.5%. And if you would have missed 40 of the best days over a 9-year period, your return would have been 3.9%. There was a study done, and this is during this period. The average mutual fund, equity mutual fund, returned over 20%. Pretty good, right? The average mutual fund investor returned less than 8%. How is that possible? Because if you would have stayed in the fund, whether it's an index fund or another fund, it goes up and down and eventually goes up. That's what I know about the stock market. I can tell you guaranteed that it's going to go from here to here. But on the way there, it's going to go up and down. And most investors buy when it's up because things sound good and sell when it's down. Basic advice, but nobody listens, so I'm going to tell you again and again and again. So when is the best time to invest in the market? When the market is open. The best time to invest in the market is when the market is open, and those words are spoken by Warren Buffett. Yeah, I talked to somebody yesterday, and they said, well, Warren Buffett was in the good market, and he did really well. Well, he did really well. You know, there's a lot of excuses. It's hard to look sometimes at a person who's local, but I mean, that advice works out. And if you think about timing the market, the truth about investing, a Nobel Prize-winning study was done, and they said, how do people really make money in an investment portfolio? Are they buying stocks at the right time? Are they timing the market? What's really happening? Well, timing the market is worth only 3%. Only 3% of performance is due to timing the market. If you ever read Fortune 500, who are the top two people in Fortune 500? Wealthiest people. Number one is Bill Gates from Seattle. Number two is Warren Buffett. And then if you look at the other 498, none of them are market timers. Nobody has made money over time timing the market. In fact, a study was done at Stanford University saying that trading could be hazardous to your wealth. They did a study showing the correlation between how many times you trade and how much money you make. And they found that the more you trade in your portfolio, the lower your portfolio is going to be. So, you know, people tell me all these great stocks they bought and they went up, but they don't tell you about the stocks they bought and they went down, do they? Stock selection is 5%. Picking the right stock at the right time and doing everything. You know, a Porsche goes from 0 to 50. It's a hot car. It's a fast car. A tech stock can go from 0 to 100 or 0 to 140. But it can go to 140 to 0 real quick. So most stock pickers do the wrong thing. They fall in love with the company. They'll buy Krispy Kreme donuts because they love the donuts. They don't look at the fundamentals of the company. Is it a good company or is it not a good company? You can go to Krispy Kreme in Seattle. We just opened our first one. People are waiting in line for 3 hours. That's the drive-through line. How big is the line here for Krispy Kremes? There isn't one. It's hype. It's a fad. You go to Walmart, any day of the week, there's a line. Is that a quality company? Absolutely. And then you can start looking at the fundamentals and the financials of the company. But we get excited about things like, if you bought a stock at 100, here's what I ask you to do. Before you buy the stock, write down on a piece of paper when you're going to get out on the upside and when you're going to get out on the downside. And at least when you're going to evaluate the stock. I won't want you to buy Berkshire Hathaway and say, I'm going to get out when it doubles. Because you could have bought it at, you know, $1,000 and you'd hate me. But when it doubles, you reevaluate, are the fundamentals, is it still a strong company? Is it still going to do well? However, if you bought a stock, a couple people asked me last night, what do you think of level three? I said, where'd you buy it? Some people bought it at 100, 125. I said, where is it now? They said, under five. Well, at what point do you stop and take your losses and get the heck out? I have a low tolerance. I'm a very conservative investor. 10 to 15%, I'm looking to get out. I can't sleep at night. And if you can't sleep at night, then don't ride a stock down from 100 to 5 or 100 to 3. So know when to get out. If you have a professional investment advisor, which I recommend, talk to him or her about that too. What's our plan? When are we getting out? So if you call him and her and say, let's, you know, get the heck out of here, and they say, well, that's not our plan. Stick to the plan. And 92% is asset allocation. Not really exciting. 92% of performance in a portfolio is asset allocation, putting it in the right places. Now, the most important thing is that you decide if you're a conservative, moderate, or aggressive investor. Things have changed. 2 years ago, diversification meant you had Microsoft, Cisco, and Intel. Today, diversification means I don't want to lose any of my money. I interviewed a conservative investor on ABC News. I said, well, what do you mean by conservative? He says, well, I want to get at least 10 to 15% a year. That's not conservative. That's aggressive. But it wasn't for a couple of years, was it? So identify what you are and then put your assets in the property. You need to have some money in maybe real estate investment trust, bonds. If you can buy individual bonds, that's great. But don't forget, bonds have risk. If you buy bonds in a bond fund, can you lose money? Sure, when the interest rates go down. You lose principal, and your payments will go down, the amount of money you make. It's important to invest internationally. Think about the opportunity we have overseas. How many people do we have in this country? About 250 million? Overseas, China, they have over 1 billion people. Think about that opportunity. And they just joined the WTO, the World Trade Organization, along with Taiwan. They have over 1 billion people. That means if you're one in a million type of guy, there's 1,000 guys just like you. Now, the problem is if you know that 92.5% is asset allocation, and you go sit down with one of the things I recommend, if you have Quicken or Microsoft Money, get on there and do those questionnaires and come out with an asset allocation. If you're not comfortable investing yourself, and that's great, take that to a financial advisor and sit and talk with them about that. Look for someone who's been in the business for more than a year. Look for somebody who's not called you on the telephone to get your business. Do you really want somebody who's called you during dinner to invest your money? Ask around, find out who a good financial planner is, sit down across from them and talk about your asset allocation. But the problem is, you know what? That's really not exciting, is it? And we want excitement. David Dreeman from the Kemper Dreeman Fund did a study showing that if, let's say we went to Vegas. Anybody been to Vegas? Anybody lose money in Vegas? Yeah, and did you go back? Sure you did. because it was fun. But some people treat investing like that. Let's say there's a red room and a green room, and in the red room, there is it's excitement. You're getting free cocktails. You're getting a show. You're losing 5-10%, but it's fun. It's exciting. People will be packed in there. Meanwhile, there's a green room with a guy named Warren Buffett just sitting there making 2-3% consistently. Not very exciting. The beverages, you have to go up and pour your own water. But people aren't going there. They're going to the red room. That's how we act as investors. And it's because of what I call financial pornography. Money magazine is one of the worst. Where to put $10,000 now? Where to do this? Where to do that? Let me tell you something, folks. And this is off the record, so we can edit this out so I don't get sued. The average writer at Money magazine is 26 years old and has $600 in the bank. They are journalists. They're not business people. My producer at ABC News is a journalist, and her job is to make my headlines catchy so you'll read them and to correct my spelling. Think about that. How long are those people in the business? And how long is your financial advisor in the business? Hopefully a long time. CNBC, what's their job? It's to get you to listen through the commercial where they make their money so you get to the next story. So they're going to come out with hype. They used to have a man named Dan Dorfman. He would yell investment recommendations. Remember him? He'd yell so loud you could turn on the mute. You could still hear him yelling. He told all my clients that he had inside information, or he didn't say it like that, but he had special information that said Starbucks is going from 14 to 6. Now, I was in Seattle as a financial consultant downtown, and my clients called me, and this is 95, and I said to them, listen, do you think Starbucks is going down, or do you think Starbucks is expanding? Look at the expansion they've done overseas. They've gone into China, in Japan, into many foreign countries, and they went up to 30. Dan Dorfman's not around anymore. And who do my clients talk to? Do they call CNBC? Well, I left my book of business. I'm no longer licensed, but I no longer manage money, but they still talk to the same people over time. So you need to look at your sheet. Why are you in this company? It's not necessarily because the folks, the journalists on CNBC, wanted to get some hype on the television. Wade Cook, do you guys, have you seen his stuff? Wade Cook is the options guy. He's from Seattle. He's really big nationally, and he's under scrutiny in about 23 states. Went public with his company. He became a multimillionaire, showing people how to do options. And his portfolio was down 89.5% last year. But you know what? He's still filling seminars full of people because they're excited about the potential prosperity with his new formulas. Susie Orman's cute. She's getting really tan, and her teeth are getting really white. Have you noticed that? I have no idea what's going on there. She says some things that I think are credible and other things that I would, you know. Her advice, ladies, she says, ladies, if you want to spend less money, carry a smaller purse. I don't consider that sound financial advice myself, but my wife has a real small purse now. And all that means is she can't carry my keys for me. There are some great people to listen to on the radio. Clark Howard. Do you get Clark Howard here? ClarkHoward.com is his website. He's the best consumer advocate on the planet. The folks, Ray Lucia from Managing Your Money. There's some good, credible people to listen to, and that's important to find out who those are. And the problem is we need to invest. We need to have more money. And a lot of people in my generation feel it's okay, we're going to have some Social Security. I don't know how you feel about that, but I call it social insecurity because the people of the Social Security Administration have told us that only 2% of 65-year-olds are self-sufficient. A lot of them are in this room right now. But 2% of 65-year-olds are self-sufficient. 45% depend on relatives. I really don't want to support my parents. 30% rely on charity. 23% are still working. How many of you, when you graduated from high school, said, you know, when I'm 60, 65, and I retire for a week or two, I'm going to go back to work at McDonald's? No hands on that one? And the problem with this, and somebody said this to me last night, and I will tell you a story. I was interviewing somebody from St. Louis, and about their investments. They put all their money in fixed securities, and fixed securities are very good, and they have a, they should be part of your portfolio, but they didn't plan well enough. They didn't have enough money. He retired at 65, and he was 80, and they were out of money. And they had to go in there living with their son. He said, you know what? My mistake was I lived too long. What a horrible thing to be saying. Things get more expensive over time, and we are living longer and longer. Do you know the average woman lives over 80? The average man lives to about 76. Do you know why that is, by the way? That's, my wife said it so she can get in the last word. But things get more expensive over time, and we forget that. It's called inflation risk. And we try to teach people about that, but they don't understand. So I have something called Twinkie risk. In 1976, a package of Twinkies cost 17 cents. Remember the good old days? 17 cents for a package of Twinkies. How much do they cost today? Anybody know? $1.19. That's really close. See, I just want to see who's buying Twinkies. That's right. Actually, $1.09 to $1.19, depending on where you buy them. And the question is, how much are they going to be 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now? Things get more expensive over time. Actually, if you buy Twinkies today and you hold them for 10 years, they'll still be fresh. But but things get more expensive over time. We don't realize that, and our investments have to keep up with inflation. So where do we go from here? We got to think about our investing, and we got to think about what's our government going to do to help us. What is our government doing currently to help us, which we're going to talk about. So we need to diversify our investments, investing international, talk to a financial planner, or get online. There's so much things, Quicken.com. There's things you can do, and we'll talk about during the Q&A session. And I had changed the speech after speaking to the group last night. And this morning's events, I've added a lot more humor to the back end of this, but. So what are we doing? Our government is doing a good job of trying to help out. And President George W. is, I got to tell you, I'm pleasantly surprised. He's just done a phenomenal job, I think, with this country. And he's doing a good job putting a good coalition together. And but he can't do everything for us. Our society needs more help from within. Not that he's from outside, but they can give us all the money in the world, but if we don't know what to do with it, we'll just blow it. Some of the things that they're doing, to let you know about, and we can talk about, again, at lunch or after here, we can talk about more specifics in your questions to get technical. He's reducing the amount we're going to be paying in taxes. By the year 2006, everyone, you'll see if you're in the top bracket, you're going to be paying 4.1% less money. Now, this is just the tip of the iceberg of where the money is going to be coming from. By the way, did you all enjoy your $600? If everybody put their $600 in the economy, it actually would have boosted the economy, but only 18% of the people actually invested their money. Do you know that? Only 18% of the people invested that money. Did you put it in the economy? Yeah. Of our country? Did you put it in the economy? The reason I ask is I live right next to Vancouver, Washington. I went over there. The exchange was so good, I spent it like it was $1,000. So. But immediately, everybody's going to have more money in their pockets from tax reductions. And then if you look at the average taxpayer, let's say someone makes $100,000 in the 31% tax bracket, that's $2,740 in your pocket. Okay, not everybody's in the same income range, but it shows you that money's going into your pocket through reduced taxes. That's just the start. Then we also have increased tax deductions. We have more itemized deductions and personal exemptions than we had before, adding money to your pocket. Marriage penalty relief. Some of the guys are, you know, saying, yay, I don't even know what it means, but it sounds good. Married couples pay more or actually have a less of a standard deduction than somebody who is a single filer. That's going to change. The year 2005, that'll be phased in. There's alternative minimum tax relief. Child-related tax relief. If you adopt children or you know people who are adopting children, that's very expensive. You're going to have much higher deductions for that and also child care expenses. Retirement contributions deductions have gone up. So the IRA, you can put away how much in an IRA, standard IRA, right now? $2,000. It's going up to $5,000. And if you're over age 50, it'll be $6,000. That's substantial. In the 401k, do you know how much you can put away? $10,500. That's going up to $15,000. And if you're over age 50, it'll be $16,000. That's a lot of money that could potentially go to the right places. But the statistics show that most people are not investing in their 401ks. So again, thank you, President George W., but we also need some education out there to get people to understand you got to invest the money. So by increased reductions and getting more reductions, we're going to have increased disposable income. Isn't that great? We're going to have a lot more money that could go somewhere. That's all that George W. and everybody else can do, is give us the opportunity. But what do we do with it? Well, anybody know what the savings rate is in the United States? The savings rate is negative. In Singapore, it's over 60%. My father, who I'll talk about him in a minute. But the point is that the savings rate is low, so if they're going to give us more money, they're going to spend it. If I gave one of my sons his allowance and doubled it, it's not going to investing. It's going to more candy. So we need to change the mentality and change the education. The bottom line on it, anything you need to know before you start investing is spend less than you make. My dad said that. He didn't know how to invest. He's not an investor. Spend less than you make. I grew up in a very modest, I grew up in the Midwest. Dad worked for Sears for 36 years, started pumping gas in college, put himself through college. Actually, in high school, he worked for the family store and saved up $3,000. That's a lot of money back then. Went to college, put himself through college, parking cars for his uncle, and working at the Sears store. Never spent the $3,000. Never touched it. Put himself through college. 36 years at Sears, and he retired a millionaire, like the millionaire next door. Most of the millionaires in this country never made more than $100,000 a year. You don't have to have money to make money. And I hate that excuse. Wayne Newton. How do we go from my dad to Wayne Newton? How's that for a segue? Wayne Newton makes $280,000 a week in Las Vegas. He's $20 million in debt. Spend less than you make. I was told when I joined a major wirehouse firm and I was in New York City, they said, you know what? No matter how much you make, you'll always be spending more. You'll always be $40 a month short. And he said that with pride because it keeps you motivated. I thought that was ridiculous. Spend less than you make. Keeping it simple, the markets are going to rebound over time. We know that. The interest rates will go back up eventually for your fixed income. People are going crazy right now. If you're in fixed income and people are approaching you on that, I would not buy for a long period of time, but I would do something called laddering. You might want to buy a 6 month, a 3 month, a 6 month, a 9 month, a 1 year. So as the interest rates start to go up, then you can lock in later, but they're really low right now. I wouldn't want you to lock in for 10, 15 years at these low rates. And again, the market's going to rebound over time. We have the best economy in the world. People are going to be coming on board with our products. Microsoft has not stopped making incredible products. And we're going to be making more money. Keep your money in the market. If you have money in the market, keep it there. If you have your money in two or three stocks, you're not in the market. You're in two or three stocks, and that's gambling. Spend less than you make, and I'll tell you about my happiest client. I had a school teacher who was a client, never made a huge amount of money, but she had a tremendous amount of money invested with me, and she only saw me once a year by her choice. I was, you know, first insulted by that. She had a large portfolio of quality stocks and a few mutual funds that she never sold. She'd come in once a year, we'd make a few adjustments and balances. I wouldn't see her for another year. And I said, well, you know, what's going on here? Don't you worry? She goes, I don't worry about the markets. I don't turn on the TV and watch the markets. I don't get upset about it because it's all going to go up eventually over time. These are long-term investments. I said, well, what do you do with your time? She said, I spend time with charities and a foundation I work for and a lot of time with my grandchildren. And that's what it's about. And so when I was up late last night at 2 in the morning and the guy next door was yelling about the Seahawks game or something, he was upset that the Raiders beat him, and I didn't want to yell too loud that I was happy about it. But I was up late, and I decided to add some humor and put this all in perspective. and talk about some lessons from my happiest client about having humor to this. Because as we're watching events from today, as we watch the market go down, we get stressed out, right? What happens as we get stressed? First of all, the definition of stress is an adverse condition during which we may experience tension or fatigue, feel unpleasant emotions, and sometimes develop a sense of hopelessness or futility. It amazes me when I meet with retired people who have $10, $15, $20 million and they're miserable. What can you possibly be miserable about? Because I know people who have $50 who have the same problems as you and they're happy. And think about it. If you're tense and fatigued, if you have a sense of hopelessness or futility, how fun are you to be around? As a parent, as a grandparent, as a spouse, as a business person, nobody's going to want to be around you. So people are getting stressed at work and it costs us money. Stress costs U.S. industry over $200 billion every year. So it behooves us to get rid of this stress. So have you ever been driving in the car and you listen to the markets and you start getting stressed out? Level three is, how ironic, it's three today. Or whatever the number is, Microsoft has come down 50 points. And you start getting stressed. This is considered a threat to your body. Do you know that your mind can't tell the difference between a real physical threat like a gun to your head and a perceived threat? The way you feel when you experience tension and fatigue and situations like this. You get an increased amount of adrenaline in your system, which erodes heart tissue. You get more cortisol in your system, which causes depression. So until you can tell the difference between a real physical threat and a perceived threat, your health is at risk. So I encourage people to get away from the media, even though I'm part of it. Walk away from it. If you know you have a solid plan, that's the most important thing, and then walk away from it. Don't pay attention. One of my clients used to drive me nuts. He used to call me about a Wall Street Journal article every morning about the numbers. I was there at 6:30 in the morning, boom, phone call. Bill would call. So you know what I did? I canceled his subscription. And then 10 days later, I hadn't heard from him. I thought he might have died, so I called. And his wife answered and said that he was at the grandkids' house down the street making them pancakes. He decided to live his life. He wasn't worried about his investments. We talked on a quarterly basis, and everything was fine. You watching the market every 5 seconds isn't going to make the markets go up and down. Right? It's not going to affect the markets. And it might make you trade more. And we know that trading more is bad for your portfolio. So have a sense of humor. Be like the teacher. Having a sense of humor, allows you to, it's a lot like exercise, actually. When you laugh, you inhale, which brings oxygen to your muscles and organs. Your pores open and you sweat. Now that's exercise right there. I was at the YMCA. I was telling jokes to my friends around the exercise equipment, and the no-neck trainer came out. He said, "Hey, Goldman, get on the treadmill." I said, "Hey, I'm jogging on the inside." But it was proven at Stanford University that 100 hearty laughs a day is equal to 10 minutes of jogging for its aerobic impact. 100 hearty laughs a day is equal to 10 minutes of jogging for its aerobic impact. Now, crying does the same thing, but how many of you would have come today if the laughing stockbroker is going to talk about crying? I didn't think so. So instead of sitting there and being stressed out and eating potato chips and watching CNBC, get out and enjoy your life. A lot of companies are finding this out now. People are really stressed the way work is. My father worked for the same company for 36 years. A lot of people don't work for the same company for six years anymore. People aren't treated the same way at work. They're treated poorly, and our economy has changed. AT&T and Sprint no longer rely on the top management to improve the bottom line. It's usually the frontline people. Have you ever had a problem with your cell phone and then you called the company and the person was rude? What do? You switch companies. So the lowest paid people in the company many times have the most impact on the bottom line. Sprint realized this. So they instituted humor into their work environment. And a senior manager, Marjorie Tippin of Sprint, said, "We believe employees who have fun feel appreciated and come together as a team. That helps them be more productive and they're more happy." And we forget about that. So one thing that I wanted to do that I added last night is something called the humor prescription. As the markets are going up and down, to talk about our lives and what we can do to keep that in check, because no matter what you do, you're not going to be affecting the markets. Well, and I promise this won't hurt a bit. The most important thing about humor, I think anybody knows, is to know your audience. For example, if I'm on ABC News, I have in my contract what I can and cannot say. Right? However, if I was, in Montana in a bar or something, you could say anything you want. But what happened in our work environment is everybody looked the same 50 years ago in the work environment. Today we're more diverse, and you need to think about what you say so you don't offend anybody. First, it's got to be funny, of course, but it's also got to be non-offensive. For example, you wouldn't tell a dirty joke to the Pope. Now, some of you are looking at me and looking at my program saying, why is a Jewish kid telling us not to? Well, I went to Catholic high school because my mom was a teacher there. A lot of Catholics, beautiful religion, a lot of the symbols and things like that. I really got caught up in it. It was a lot of fun. I even went to confession once. But apparently you're supposed to go prepared with something in mind. You can't just make it up on the spot. I was so excited to be there, I forgot to prepare. And what do you say? Forgive me, Father, for I've sinned. I paid retail. A gentleman walked into a bar on a Sunday afternoon and ordered 3 beers. And the bartender said, are people joining you? He said, no, these 3 beers are for me. And I drink 2 of them in honor of my 2 brothers who live on the other side of the country who enjoy drinking beer, but they can't be here right now. This tradition went on for several years, for several Sundays. One Sunday he walks in and orders 2 beers. And the bartender really felt sad. He said, did you lose one of your brothers? He said, no, they're both alive and they enjoy drinking beer, but I myself gave it up for Lent. Humor's pretty simple. It involves observing. Jerry Seinfeld built an entire career on observational humor. Pat Hazel's whole act is about observations. Both Pat and my older brother, Pat and Matt, both, most of the stuff they do is about their childhood and how much fun that was and how much we had fun as children. There's humor all around us. We just need to look. Classified ads. Some of my favorites. I got one emailed to me the other day. It said, for sale 1979 Cadillac hearse. Body in good condition. Did you ever wonder if a hearse could drive in the carpool lane? Or wanted dynamite handler. Must be willing to travel unexpectedly. Weddings are very interesting. My younger brother got married, and they had 5 bridesmaids in purple dresses, bright, bright, purple, shiny dresses. And my little one, my youngest son, said, hey, look, it's Barney. And when we talk about humor and knowing our audience, it's very important to be careful of religious humor. However, I love some religious humor is just wonderful. I like watching religious TV. Have you ever seen the religious TV and they had the faith healers, the Benny Hinn? He's really remarkable. He had 50,000 people on stage and like 30 people, or in an auditorium, 30 people were up on stage to be healed. The lady up front was blind. He slapped her on the forehead. She fell down and broke her arm. She had to get back up, go to the end of the line, start over again. She didn't see it coming. I saw a church billboard that said, do you know what hell is? Come here, our new organist. Learn from children. That's one thing that's really magical about Pat Hazel. I know that some of you probably know him from here. He's still like a little kid, and so is my brother. And Pat is tremendously, tremendously talented. He can draw things on an Etch-a-Sketch. He'll do paintings on an Etch-a-Sketch. And he's so fun and fun to be around, but he's got that energy like a child has. And it's interesting because the average adult laughs 15 times a day. The only time I ever saw Pat in a suit Or he was in a tux. I was at my brother's wedding. He stood up in the wedding. It was weird to see him in a tux. But 15 times a day is what the average adult laughs. What happened? You know how much the average child laughs? Over 400 times a day. 400 times a day. Who ruined it for him? Did you ever say anything to your children that you swore that you would never say? I'm going to be different than my parents. I remember my kids running around. I said, careful, guys. Somebody might lose an eye. And they both turned to me and gave me that look that I gave my parents. Somebody might lose an eye. How many times did you hear that growing up? And how many 8-year-old pirates have you seen running around? I don't think that's really been a problem. Kids know how to have fun. They take recess breaks. What do? We take coffee breaks. A large company in Southern California did a study, and they took the company and split it into two groups. One group took a traditional coffee break. We'd go get a coffee, go get a Danish, get a Krispy Kreme, get two more Krispy Kremes, sit down in our chair and get all wound up, while the other half of the company learned to take a recess break like a kid does. My son's in first grade this year, he said. I said, what do you like about first grade? He said, I get another recess break. It's great. They'll go for a walk away from the stress, read a book, play games. And when I do interactive workshops, we design recess breaks. You can do something that is under $20 and not harmful to others. It's very simple. And the group that took the recess break had far fewer sick days at the end of the year. But we forget that. And especially if you're retired, you should be doing this each day, getting out and walking away from the stress. And happy photos. Do y'all carry photos of things you're happy about and people you're... My wife woke up at 2 in the morning and said, I have a cramp in my back. And she yelled from the bathroom, I feel the baby's head. This was nowhere in the plans. I called 911, and 32 minutes later, Annie Sproles and Jimi Hendrix from the fire department helped deliver our second child. My wife did it with no drugs. Both children, and because I had the epidural. I paid for it. I would have helped out, but I couldn't move my legs. Isn't it amazing? In 32 minutes from phone call to them helping, one push. We named him Luge. How many kids... Have you ever given up, like, made the batter and given them a spoon or the beater, and they say, oh, my cholesterol's way too high? How many have high cholesterol like me? I have 290. 290 is my cholesterol. Can you believe that? I'm 10 points short of Crisco. But not once have I heard one of my children say, my cholesterol. What's important to you? Many times we forget about it. We go through the life, we're worried about our investments, we're worried about all kinds of things, and we forget about what's important to us. If you know what's important to you, and we're going to get into a couple of questions in a minute, you'll be able to do a better job of designing your investments, because then they're going to be hand in hand. One thing I encourage people to do is change your perceptions. Having a humorous perspective about life allows you to face crisis and change instead of being defeated by it. Sometimes the news comes out and people just take everything personally and just let it beat them down. But have a humorous perspective. It's okay to be depressed, because they say from 5 to 7% of our population is depressed at any one time. And that's okay. But here's the key. Anybody who's been in a relationship for more than a week knows this. If you're having a bad day, you let the people around you know that you're having a bad day and it's not them. Because how many times have you been in a group of people, somebody comes in a bad mood, and you start thinking, gee, what did I do? Maybe it's me. If you're having a bad day, let the people around you know. You can't change what happens. You can't change what happens to the stock market. You can't change what happens to the events of the world. But you can change how it affects you. And you have power over that. Putting it all in perspective. Now, this is really critical. I encourage everybody to answer these questions before they make their financial plan, before they go in to talk to a financial planner. And any good financial planner will... ask some questions like this. If you go in and say, I want 150 shares of Krispy Kreme, and you don't know the financial consultant, they write the order, they're an order taker. They're not a financial consultant. They're an order taker, not a financial consultant. Okay? I learned this. One of my clients couldn't stand her daughter-in-law, and I won't get into the reasons, she just didn't like her daughter-in-law. And then I was talking to her about long-term care insurance, something that I didn't sell, but I recommended that she look into. And she said, well, you know, I said, what are your options? You can get care by a professional nurse, or you can have your daughter-in-law, you know, take care of you. But I knew her enough to give her that recommendation. I used to ask myself these questions every day because I used to go and on my way to look at the stock market, I get depressed about what could possibly happen. You ever do that? You're driving to an event and you get there, you're depressed because you've already thought about the things you have to do or could have done or should have done. But what are you happy in your life about right now? Is there anybody happy about something in their life? What are you happy about? Your daughter's getting married. That's great. Something they're laughing. You must know your daughter. I don't know. Purple dresses? Yeah. But, okay, and is anybody proud of something? Because I think there's a lot to be proud of in this room and what you're supporting, the cause you're supporting here. What are you committed to? Is anybody committed to something? Absolutely. People are committed to something in their lives, committed to their families, committed to their jobs, committed to their faith. But we forget this throughout the day because we're too busy focused on the news that's being thrown at us. And what can you do to improve your business, something in your life, perhaps a hobby that you're passionate about? So what happens is we are reactive as a society instead of proactive. And that's changing now with the events. But you wake up in the morning, you turn on the news, and this stuff happens. And by the time it's noon, you're depressed, and you haven't done anything constructive. That happens to us sometimes. But if you wake up and you think, what am I happy about my life right now? What am I proud of? What am I committed to? And what can I do right now to improve something? Then you're really focused and get you going on the day. And I encourage, I know some people have their Franklin planners, and I have one of those, and I do a to-do list. You do a to-do list? Okay, you know you're going overboard if you do a to-do list and put things on there you've already done, just so you can check them off. You are about as happy as you make your mind to be. Abraham Lincoln said that. I believe that. It's your choice. Absolutely. My father said, one of his great quotes, my father said, you don't necessarily have to have the best of everything. You need to make the best of everything. Think about that. And he said that when I asked for a raise in my allowance. Thanks. You're welcome.
You've been listening to a program from the Uta Hawley Lecture Series. We've heard a talk by the laughing stockbroker, David Goldman. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Monday morning, November 12, 2001, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Keith Christie for his help in the recording of this program. Special thanks also to Jerry Ann Cowan, Publicity Chairman for the Uta Hawley Lecture Series, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The next lecture in the series will be Monday morning, April 8, 2002, at 11 o'clock. The speaker will be Paul Duke, former host of Washington Week in Review. If you would like to attend this or other lectures in the series, call the Uta Hawley Girls Village at 453-0803. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.